Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. I go through three lessons from the book of Exodus and how it relates to today's times. No advertisers in this episode. If you have been blessed by our program, go to charliekirk.com and become a member. That is charliekirk.com and become a member. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Okay, please take a seat. I'm going to close this. Okay, so I want to get to question and answer because I think that's actually the most fun, and I have a feeling there's a lot of questions. There's a lot I could talk about. First, I just want to say there's something really exciting happening in the country where I'm getting invited to speak at schools like this all across the country that didn't exist a decade ago, where parents are starting to rise up and start new communities and start new schools. This is exactly what is necessary in the country right now. Because if there is a woke private school and a failed public school, just start a new school. And we are really good at starting new things. We're really bad at preserving our things from getting captured and infiltrated. That's a separate issue. They're experts at infiltration, experts at destabilization. But I just want to compliment and commend the whole team here. Think really big, because the demand is greater than you could ever imagine. I love Colorado. I hate what these people have done to it. And you have to think multi-generationally. You really do. And that's why this effort is so incredibly important. And you have no idea the child that you might be helping educate at Colorado Christian, the impact that they might make. You have no idea. If they might be a change maker, an entrepreneur, a senator, a congressman, something beyond your wildest imagination. Or the most important thing, a loyal husband and wife and someone who loves the Lord, honestly, even beyond, you know, a massive change maker. So I'm going to actually talk about my favorite book of the Bible. I don't think you'll be able to guess it. It's funny. I love the Word, and I love what it does to you through different walks of life. And because I'm a glutton for punishment, I've decided to go through the first 5 books of the Bible in original Hebrew and go verse by verse. That's, if you want to really a big challenge, do that. Just finished Leviticus. That's no fun at all. It's unbelievably awesome as a Christian to read Leviticus for many different reasons, right? And it's amazing. But my favorite book of the Bible is the book of Exodus, and it's not quoted enough or understood enough. And I really think that there's more parallels for what we're living through right now in the book of Exodus than almost any other part of the Word. And so, you know, I was studying and studying Exodus, and so much pops out. So I'm going to go three lessons that I think we as believers, we as patriots, can derive from the book of Exodus. And some you say, okay, I've heard that one before. But I guarantee you, I'm going to isolate a verse that you've probably never heard any pastor ever isolate. It's just kind of what I call a flyover verse. You know what I'm talking about? Where you just kind of skim, you're like, okay, let's go, you know. It's like the verse before John 3:16, John 3:15, and John 3:17. Does anyone know those? Probably not. Well, maybe in this room, but very few people do, right? It's a flyover verse. So it's first important to remember Exodus in Greek means the way out, exodus, right? And the actual labeling of the verse is Israelites oppressed, or the captivity in Egypt. The whole Old Testament, the first five books of the Bible, of the Word of God, is centered around Egypt. Egypt is actually the villain of the Torah. Egypt is tyranny. Egypt is authoritarianism. Egypt is paganism. Egypt is godlessness. Egypt is one-size-fits-all rule. Said differently, Egypt is the Biden administration. And so, now, if I offended you, you're in the wrong dinner. I'm sorry. And the whole Bible is written, even in Genesis, it's written as a refutation of Egypt. And if you know anything, devout Jews will tell you that the Exodus is the most important thing. Creation and Exodus are the two most important parts of Jewish life, right? Whether it be the Passover Seder, whether it be the Shema, whatever it is, Egypt is the whole ballgame, right? And like, remember, O Egypt, remember how we were delivered from Egypt, and I'll dive into that. So there's this amazing thing, and you remember the end of Genesis, right? Joseph does this remarkable stuff. He doesn't do it. God does it through Joseph, and he's just a messenger. And he basically saves Egypt from famine and from starvation and saves a whole civilization, right? And the first chapter of Exodus sets up the whole, it's what I call the turning point chapter, and we're living through this right now in America, and this is why Christian education is so important and why supporting this academy is so important. And it's a verse that you would just kind of read over and like, okay, yeah, whatever. Then rose a king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Okay, Charlie, what's the big deal? That's exactly what's happening on university campuses across the country. Then rose a generation that did not know George Washington. Then rose a generation who did not know Abraham Lincoln. You get tyranny when you forget the sacrifices that were made before you. You get tyranny when you don't know your history. Right there, the entire book of Exodus gets set up. So here's Joseph that through God saves them from famine, saves them from starvation. The Egyptians should have statues made to Joseph. They should have songs made to Joseph. But all it took was one king who didn't have the memory of what Joseph did before. And then what happens? That king rises and everything changes. He says, who are these Israelites? They multiply like insects. Let's get rid of these guys. If you fail to pass down your values from one generation to the other, you can quickly all of a sudden get authoritarianism, tyranny, murder, genocide very, very quickly. It can happen in one generation. And I don't think we as Christians isolate this teaching enough because we act as if it happens automatically sometimes. Like, oh, I can send my kid to government school and they'll still share my values. You know, we go to church once a quarter and, you know, we listen to Christian music, you know, every so often. And, you know, they'll like through osmosis. And even in the cocktail reception, I had people come up to me and they say, Charlie, how am I supposed to deal with kids that don't share my values? How did this happen? And my question is always the same. You know it. What college did they go to? Always. And in this case, it was Northwestern and Michigan, right? So nice selections. But and again, I'm not picking on you guys. It's a very sweet couple. But it just stood out, right? And you're here tonight because you want your children to share your values. That you want your children to live in liberty. And so that verse right there should be, that should be our mission statement. We never want to have a king or a sovereign, the people, ever not know the sacrifices that were made before. When I visit college campuses, and I visit college campuses so you don't have to, I am told, Charlie, the founders were a bunch of racist, old, dead white guys. We're a colonistic, colonialistic, misogynistic, homophobic, terrible country. That's a generation that did not know Joseph. So then all of a sudden, they have a willingness and openness for tyranny, for totalitarianism, authoritarianism, because that is actually how we are naturally programmed. I actually didn't plan to talk about this, but it's just a little bit of a side note. The human being wants to be taken care of far more than they want to be free. Freedom is a value. You naturally do not want to be free. And if you disagree, you are not paying attention during COVID. People that were otherwise some of the most rational people that I knew lost their bloody mind wearing masks in a car alone because they wanted to be told what to do. Freedom requires risk. You cannot be free without chance. You can't have both. If you want to have everything taken care of, go commit a federal crime or just become a conservative because inevitably you'll end up in federal prison. So, and then you'll go to jail. There's no freedom, but there is assuredness at prison. Three meals a day, bunk you don't have to pay for, you don't have to work for what you get. Prison is the opposite of freedom. And so here's the Israelites. They're living in total totalitarianism because a king came. He did not know what the previous generation did. The next verse, Exodus 1:17, one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible. And I screamed this at pastors, and I yelled it at pastors, and I was unsuccessful. And I'll tell you why. But the midwives to the Hebrews, is in the original Hebrew, it says this, feared God. Now, the verse before it, in Exodus 1:16, the king who forgot Joseph was like, hey, murder all the firstborn. Murder them all. Kill the babies. Now, we would know nothing about killing babies in our civilization. We're way more advanced than that, obviously. We would never do such a thing, ever, obviously. Look how advanced we are. We have Twitter and air conditioning, right? Right. So this is, I always laugh when people say, the Bible's such a medieval text. We've advanced so far. Yeah, right. No, we just do the evil things quicker and better and quieter and more secretly. So, of course, we're more advanced than that. But the king or the Pharaoh says, kill the firstborn. And I love this. The midwives disobeyed Pharaoh because they feared God. And it goes on to say that the Hebrew is not a great translation. God dealt well with them, or God found favor in them. God loves when you defy tyranny for liberty. That is the heart of God. God wants you to reject tyranny if it engages in somebody's life or interferes with their liberty. A regular woke, skinny jean-wearing pastor will tell you, no, no, no. Romans 13, man, submit to the rulers and authority because God put them there for your good. And then I say, okay, rocket scientist, constitutional scholar, your TED Talk rock concert, a thing you call a church with organized parking and a coffee bar. Like, let me ask you, since you're super smart, who are the leaders in America exactly? In Romans 13, God put the leaders in authority because they're there for your good. Who are the leaders? And they say the mayors, the congressmen, the senators. No, the people are the authority. So when the people's rights are infringed, the mayors and the state senators and Governor Polis should be submitting to us. We don't submit to them. So I love this verse, and God dealt well with the midwives. Let me ask you, is the American church, are we as Christians fighting tyranny the way the midwives fought tyranny in Egypt? I don't think we're doing a good job. I don't. I think you guys are. I mean, there's an exception, but the large part of the American church, American Christianity, is submit to the government authority, submit to the cultural tyranny, submit to the pressure of the day, submit to what other people are saying. That is not what God wants. And by the way, it's not just in Exodus. In Daniel, Daniel disobeyed the king and still prayed his prayers, ended up in the lion's den, right? In Acts, it says we obey God, not man, time and time again. Psalm 97:10 is my favorite, one of my favorite verses of the Bible. I have a lot of favorite verses. Psalm 97:10. If you love God, you must hate evil. I don't think that we as Christians are doing a good job fulfilling that verse. I hear all the time, but Charlie, we must be nice. And I say, great, glad you brought up that point. Where in the 66 books of the Bible does the word nice appear? In Aramaic or Greek or Hebrew? Waiting, ready, set, go. And they say, well, we have to be loving. I said, yeah, but what does loving mean? Tell me in the original Greek. Is it agape, storge, phileo? And they say, well, oh my goodness. We kind of had this discourse earlier. But we're not called to be nice. We're called to tell the truth. And honestly, we've done a pretty crummy job of telling the truth the last 30 years here in America. We have allowed the worst of all evil institutionalize itself, go after our children. And I finally am starting to see a response. This school is evidence of a response to all this institutionalized evil. And the midwives feared God, and God dealt well with them. If we want God to deal well with us, maybe we should start fighting for liberty against tyranny. The next verse, so God delivers his chosen people out of Egypt. And every time you hear Egypt, just think tyranny. Every time, right? And so he delivers them out of Egypt, one of my favorite parts. They're in the desert, God, 10 miracles, the sea is parted. And this is why I always laugh when atheists say, all I need to do is see a miracle and I'll believe in God. Like, no, you don't. Next Tuesday, you'll forget about God, right? Because you have a heart problem. You are your own God, right? That's not true. The Hebrews saw God move in an amazing way. They get into the desert. Within days, they're complaining. That's all the Jews do, the entire Old Testament. They complain, and they complain, and they complain. That's why God had to let them all die off and have Joshua generation go in. He's like, these people are not ready for Israel. They complain way too much. We want melons. We want meat. We want all the cucumbers, literally translation. So they get into the desert, and they say, we want to go back to Egypt because at least we had meat. At least we had melons. At least we had leeks. At least we had cucumbers. They wanted slavery over freedom because they ate better. And God's like, what am I going to do with these people? Like, this is, and I honestly think that's, I agree with Dennis Prager on this. It's one of the reasons why God chose the Jews. If you could do it with this group of people, you could do it with any group of people, right? If you could get this group of misfits to be successful in finance and business and education, there's something to this book, right? There's something there that we can all learn from. Anyway, so that God then, God is a God of order. We as Christians don't do a good enough job. It drives me nuts when Christians only say God is love. Yeah, but he's also other things, okay? He's a judging God. Oh, you can't say that. Well, it's true. Jesus will judge the sinners at the end of the age. One of the main reasons why the church has gone woke is you'll never hear the three-letter word that every person needs to hear. Sin. How do you know what redemption is if you don't know what sin is? Unknown concept. We just tell people, oh, you're perfect the way you are. Actually, you're not. Like, you're pretty crummy and need Jesus. Like, really bad. Like, really bad. All of us do. All the time. And we're going to keep sinning and we keep on needing Jesus. And so God established order for us. Of course, the Decalogue being the Ten Commandments or the Ten Statements. And, of course, it begins, I am the Lord your God who delivered you from Egypt. He reminds them before he gives him the Decalogue. Moses, the Decalogue. Just in case you forgot, I delivered you from tyranny. God's heart is not for people to live in tyranny. That's when it drives me nuts when people say, Charlie, you're too political as a Christian. Look, God calls us to fight authoritarianism all the time. So then, my favorite one of the commandments that comes tonight, that pertains to tonight, is the one that every one of you are vigilant and why you're here tonight. Honor your mother and father so that you may live long in the land of which God is giving you. And I'm going to spend the remainder of my remarks on this, and then we'll do some questions. Everything that the culture is doing when it comes to anybody under 18 is about trying to obliterate this commandment. From TikTok to social media, this commandment is the most proven commandment to have a free society. If you were to say, Charlie, out of all the Ten Commandments, what is the one that if you stop doing, you get tyranny the fastest? You actually, more so than murder, more so than stealing, more so than not even having any gods before God, if you do not honor your mother and father, and I'll tell you exactly what that means, you 100% will lose a free society. You cannot have a group of young people that dishonor or curse, which is the opposite of honor, their parents, and also live in liberty. It has never happened in the history of the species. Now, I'm a student of history. I love history. If anyone can tell me an example of a superpower that went out of their way to teach their children to hate the country that they're in, I'm all ears. I think it's the first time it's ever happened in the history of the species. And I've asked many different historians. When a wealthy, powerful, benevolent superpower has decided to teach their young, we actually hate the place that is pretty awesome. It is civilizational suicide. There will be historians 50 to 100 years from now writing books and teaching college classes trying to answer the America question. How could a country that did so much good in World War II be so wealthy, be the beacon of light and liberty, have so much opportunity for so people, go out of its way? And my answer is very simple. When you are secular and you do not believe in God, you must fill it with fake religions. Don't believe me, go drive in one of these neighborhoods like I just did. BLM, Gay Pride, those are the pagan religions of the day. You always have to fill it with some source of meaning, whether it be, you know, the false god of BLM or the false god of trans surgeries for kids, whatever it is. They have to feel an attachment to something, and it's out of guilt. If you don't know how to deal with your guilt, because everyone feels guilt at some point, you're going to do some pretty wacky stuff. And boy, are we living in a society that is just ridden with pity and guilt. Pity for, like, ourselves and our own state of affairs. It's rather remarkable. But if you have a strong attachment to the generation that came before you, you can inoculate yourself against that virus. So let's go through it. It's the only one of the Ten Commandments that involves a direct promise and also your nation. So we're talking about politics, we're talking about our country, we should probably isolate the one of the Ten Commandments that deals with the country. So honor, what does that word mean in Hebrew? It means heavily, or to treat with seriousness or intentionality. What does curse mean in Hebrew? Lightly. It's the same root. So if you were to treat your parents lightly, you were to curse them. Now what does that mean to honor your mother and father? It means that when you're at college, you enter college believing that your parents are more correct than your professors. That does not happen. professors at almost every single university across the country go out of their way to invalidate everything a parent has taught them up until age 18. Your parents are outdated. They're probably racist. They're terrible. Oh, by the way, thanks for paying to the tuition to bring you here, but we're going to turn you into little revolutionaries, basically. Finally, honor your mother and father so that you may live long in the land of which you are in. Marxism depends on three things: the obliteration of religion, property, and family. Private property, they're doing a great job, and they're going to continue to do it. Religion, church rates are going down dramatically, and they've infiltrated the American church. But the family was always the one that was able to say no. And you are going to have to, someone's going to have to explain this to me, how so many suburban house moms here in Colorado want their kids to suffer. It is unbelievable to me. This is one of the most radical, like, trans sanctuaries in the entire country. And it's not isolated. I'm sure you all know families or kids where you have parents that are excited to go get their 15-year-old's breasts removed. It's amazing to me. And so the family's totally getting obliterated and deteriorated. That's why this school matters so much, though, and why what you're doing matters so much, is that a strong nuclear family is a bulwark to any form of tyranny or any sort of despotism that we live through. And Marxism is really the kind of diabolical, and I use that word intentionally, enemy to the American Republic and the American project. As it aims to do these things, as it continues to try to put these ideas into the zeitgeist, we ask ourselves the question, how does one fight back against it? And that's why the rise of homeschool and this alternative schooling is so exciting. They want you to just release your kid to the public government school and never ask a question after that. If you actually read their literature, they don't believe that it's your child. It's the state's child. That's not an exaggeration. You might say, Charlie, how did Colorado get so wacky? You know Colorado's the second most educated state in the country, college-educated state? There's your answer. Is that if you are nonstop producing people with college diplomas that believe men can give birth and have degrees in North African lesbian poetry, don't be surprised when your politics go insane. I trust welders, plumbers, and construction workers far more than any given professor at, no offense, CU Boulder. I'm sorry, I just have to say it. I'm sorry. And so we must build new things. And I mentioned this earlier, we do not do a good enough job of defending our institutions from infiltration because we let our guard down and they take advantage of our good intentions. How many times do you feel like, well, what's the big deal? You know, I want to be accepting to all people. So here's the playbook. It's so simple, okay? Get a seat at the table, complain relentlessly, until I'm able to debase the leader on fake accusations, and then I control the institution. How many times have you seen that? FBI, military, university campuses, major corporations. And they're relentless. You know what they operate? They operate like a bacterial infection that will not go away, that will just gnaw and gnaw and grow and multiply. And we're like, well, my goodness, the CRT DEI people, they used to have 2 seats at the table. Now they have 10 seats at the table. And I don't want to be called a racist because that's the worst thing that you could be called. And so let's just let them control everything. So how do you summarize CRT? It's so simple. Call everything racist until you control it. That's it. That's what CRT is. Queer theory, call everything transphobic until you control it. It's a means to power. It's not about liberation. It's not about teaching history. It's a means to institutional takeover. And so the alternative is once they take over everything, build new stuff. And that's what you're doing. And so my one piece of advice to you guys, build, be bold, but please be vigilant about them trying to capture your institution. Because they don't build new stuff. That's what's crazy. They don't ever build anything beautiful or bold. They just take over stuff that we have built with our value system. And then we're like, well, we used to have that great thing. We used to have that church and used to have that school and used to have that place and used to have that, you know, that company. And so they're experts at takeover. And so building new things is quite honestly the only and the best option. So I'll say this in closing. You know, I get asked all the time, you know, Charlie, you know, this is a Christian audience. You know, Charlie, do you think that, you know, we're in the end times? And I'm not a pastor, I'm not a theologian, so I'm not equipped to answer that. But I can say this. I'm very concerned that people are being taken advantage of by some pastors out there where they say, Charlie, Jesus is coming next Thursday. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to fight. Look, people ask, are you pre-trib? Are you post-trib? I'm pan-trib. It's all going to pan out in the end, okay? So I'm on the welcoming committee, not the planning committee, okay? So this whole thing is a bunch of, you know, it's somewhat of a distraction. But, you know, people say, Charlie, you know, we must look at the signs of the time. It's important to know what it means in the days of Noah. All that stuff is great and really important. I understand that. However, here's where it drives me nuts. And I see it happen, and I want to make sure if this just touches one of you tonight, I will have done my job, okay? Because you might be listening to some of those overly emphasized end times pastors, and you might feel disempowered, and you might feel like you don't have to do anything. If I could just reach one of you, I feel I've done my job, which is the right response is if you feel that the world is ending and Jesus is coming soon, is not run to the hill with the kids, is to occupy till Jesus comes, is to hold as much turf and much terrain for his imminent return. And that must be our attitude, because I'm afraid it has become an excuse, and I mean that very carefully. I've seen it. Where people say, Charlie, I don't need to donate. I don't need to start schools. I got asked by a Christian the other day, why even have kids? Because Jesus is coming again so quickly. I was like, wow. Jesus said the time or the day and the hour is unknown. It could be 5 minutes. It could be 50 years or 500 years. I get in trouble for even saying that because people say, Charlie, it's no more than, you know, 5 years. I said, listen, we don't know. It's what you do that matters. The enemy would love nothing more than to have us remain complacent, remain neutral, if we are off by 200 years. God wants us to fight for what is good and what is righteous, regardless of what the signs of the times are telling us around us. And the most important thing that we as Christians have done a bad job, and we as Protestants have done a bad job of, is this. And I have to brag on the Catholics for a second. They have done a much better job than we as Protestants have done. A much better job at building colleges, and they're all woke now, but at building, you know, but that's what happens. We don't defend anything. We build these beautiful things and the bacteria takes over. And so then at K-12 schools, and I'll prove it to you, how many Bible-believing, Spirit-filled Christians are on the U.S. Supreme Court? There are far more Catholics. It's because they are experts at multi-generational type building and passing down values. I think we can learn something from that. And I think that one of the reasons we haven't done that is that since 1950, there's been a strain of Christianity that has told us we're getting zapped up in the next 5 minutes. And that might be true, but you have to act like it's not. And you have to act like you could have a lot more time left on the clock. And so if we change that attitude, by the way, the whole ballgame changes. I hope you understand. You will ignite one of the most powerful silent majorities. If you get Christians that have been waiting for the imminent return the last 60 years and done very little, and you get them into an action phase and realize that they have to try to act, watch out. All of a sudden, the enemy's going to be on the run in a very, very big way. Okay, let's do some questions, and I'll stay as long as you'll have me. So, okay.
Okay, so I have one question, and then I'm going to turn it out to all you guys, so get your questions ready. The college thing is a big deal. I feel like we've been even asked, do you send your kids to college? My husband's out of the room, so I can say this. They're not going to Boulder. For those of you who don't know where my husband went and where he's very involved with right now, but it's a tough call. What do you think the chances are if, let's say, our kids go through a school like this, make it, get into a college, percentage-wise, where are we at with dropping off the bandwagon?
You'll lose one out of four.
Across the board, that's what
yes.
you see in universities.
Even the strongest K-12 that I've seen, homeschool, one out of four will be lost. If they have a public school, you'll lose closer to 50-60%.
Wow. Okay, guys, we have a lot of work to do. We're going to try to break that statistic.
Or just not send them to college. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes. Well, right. Well, that'll be a different thing. Okay.
Unless they go to Hillsdale or CCU, but yes, which is... Yeah. But those are the exceptions to the... Let me be very clear.
Yes.
That is not how most schools are, okay?
Yeah. Okay,
that
good.
Very good. That was very enthusiastic.
I would love to hear your opinions on parachurches at the big universities and how I've heard like about CRU, InterVarsity. I have friends that have been involved with CRU. Family members say they're strong Christians, but they've even mentioned saying they've gotten a little woke, and so they're still considered themselves Christians, but they've changed their views on certain things. And that's really disturbing to me.
Yeah, so. I find Crewe and InterVarsity to be worthless, to be honest. Oh. Yeah, so they've never come to my defense or helped anything we've done. And I do nothing but college campus outreach for 11 years. And, you know, I listen to InterVarsity or on a radio program on K-Love talk about their outreach is to talk in the terms of Gen Z of equity and diversity and inclusion. And so, I mean, don't take my word for it. Go to their websites, right? Go do your own research. They think you win more people to Christ by watering down the gospel. And so my question to Crewe or InterVarsity is, why don't you guys come learn from the organization that when we go to campus, we can't find rooms big enough to fit all the students that want to come to our events? And yes, we talk about politics, we talk about abortion, but we also talk about Jesus. And I honestly think that what we're doing is far more effective than what Crewe and InterVarsity has done. I mean, we can pinpoint tens of thousands of young people that have given their life to the Lord that have never been reached out to by any of those groups. And so, I have pretty strong opinions about it, but because this is the space that they believe in what I call happy talk Christianity. And I don't have time for that.
Charlie, thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit more about Turning Point USA and the impact that you're having on college campuses. And have you considered doing more work in K-12? I know you've started doing some work in K-12, but it seems like the indoctrination of our colleges has been there for a long time, and now it's really entering K-12. So, two-part question, impacting college and also K-12.
Yeah, thank you, Norton. Norton does great work, by the way. Big fan. He's terrific. So, Turning Point USA has grown greater and bigger than anything I ever could have imagined. We actually have more high school chapters than college chapters across the country, which is amazing. We are seeing some signs of promise for college freshman men. It's the most conservative young men entry class in 50 years that we've seen, which is amazing. And the data shows it and our experience shows it. The young ladies are not so promising, so we're working on that. Single issue voters, everybody. That's a tougher deal. But look, the college campus outreach is integral. I'm actually going on tour coming up next week. And we do hundreds and hundreds of events almost every single week while school is in session. We have the biggest events of anybody in the entire movement in this space. And our mission statement is to make sure that your grandkids can live in a free society. We also get students elected to student body president. We have members of Congress that have graduated from Turning Point USA now, Ana Paulina Luna. We have some of the biggest voices in the entire conservative movement, Isabel Brown, Brandon Tatum, Will Witt, and also Candace Owens, just to name a few, that started at Turning Point USA. So pretty proud of that. Thankful for that, I should say. And then, we have Turning Point Academy now, where our vision is to start hybrid schools across the country. And so it's a mixture between high school and traditional, about 1 or 2 days of in-person instruction a week, and then the rest at home school. So we've done about 30 of those so far across the country, and we're scaling that up. And then we also have an educator summit where we bring in teachers from across the country. We had 700 educators come to our educator summit, where we train teachers themselves how to properly teach about the Constitution and liberty. Also do a pastor's training. We just finished that up. We have 2,000 church partnerships. We just had 1,300 pastors come to our pastor summit in San Diego. And our goal at TPUSA Faith is very simple. We want to kick wokeism out of the American church immediately because it's a heresy from the pit of hell. And then we have some other goals too. But that's the first one. So thank you, Norm.
Charlie, first off, thank you for all that you do. I've followed you for a number of years on social media. What do you feel like has been the most effective way for you to communicate to people that are seemingly irrational in a rational manner?
I visit these campuses, and did anyone see what happened at Flagstaff this last week? A couple people mentioned it. Yes, it's nuts. So I visited Northern Arizona University, and I do this thing where I set up a card table and I'll speak to students, and it's interesting. And so I arrive on campus, right, and there's like hundreds of people in support of us and Turning Point, and then there are tons of protesters, right? So I believe if demons appear, you go right into them, right? You shine light on the cockroaches, they scatter. So, you know, they're all there on campus. So I go right into it. And I didn't notice it at the time, right? And I go back and I rewatch the video, and every single one of them screaming at me, and I mean screaming, are all women. And men who think they are women. All of them, right? Now, I'm not saying women are not rational. I'm not saying that. I am saying college women are not rational, okay? I'm just going to be honest. Like, there is something in the water there. They're so emotional. it's very hard to reason with them. I don't know what it is, single-issue voting, built-up resentment, hookup culture. We have to fix it. It's a real big problem. Where that before I could even get a word out edgewise, I mean like primal scream. For those of you that saw the video, you know what I'm talking about, right? And at that point, I just kind of stand and just let them holler for 30 minutes in my ear, right? So yeah, that's hard because what they have done is they've weaponized young female resentment against conservatives is what they've done. And that's a really tricky, dangerous thing. And yeah, look, you could broaden that to the entire country. One of the reasons why the country has kind of moved away from the roots that we should be in is that one of the most liberal Democrat voting blocks in the country are 30 to 35-year-old college-educated women with good careers and cats, right? And so as soon as they get married, they become more conservative. Once they have kids, they become Republicans. But as they remain single and they have a good career, they have a great attachment to the American left-wing cause. What I just said gets me in so much trouble. I don't care in that sense. It's just, it's hype. It's true, right? And I also think we've done a real bad, here's the thing. When you actually privately speak to some of these young ladies on campus outside of all the cameras, they want someone to tell them it's okay to go get married and have kids. And they feel pushed into a hyper-masculine corporate environment. So they have to act in ways that they honestly are not really wired to be able to do. It's okay to tell young women, go find your soulmate and have lots of children. In fact, lots of them want to do that, and we should applaud that. I don't always get warm reception because, I mean, parents will say, oh, my daughter, I'll tell you an example. You know, I had this argument 5 years ago. They said, oh, my daughter can get married and, you know, later. And she's now 32, and she's really upset, you know, that she can't find somebody. And honestly, her odds aren't good because men don't want to marry really, you know, bitter 32-year-olds. Like, they would rather marry a 23 or 24-year-old Christian girl that is grateful to be alive.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for being here. My mom is actually part of Turning Point in Douglas County, so thank you for all that you do. I just had a quick question. My husband and I, we're millennials, so early 30s. And we have a lot of our friends that are conservative and are afraid to have kids because of where the school system's going, what's going on in our country. And so we're just encouraging them to have kids, but what would your encouragement be? What would your advice be to our friends? How can we encourage them to continue to have kids, to continue to move forward? I'd love to have your thoughts on
that. That's a great question. I have yet to ever hear a good excuse not to have children, and I've heard them all, right? I mean, the excuses I hear on campus, I'm not having kids because they contribute to the climate crisis. That's the new one, right? Is that the earth worshippers want you to have less kids so that, you know, some insect in the Rocky Mountains can flourish or something. I don't know. Whatever the environmentalists are arguing. You guys have to live with these people. I don't know how you do it. If there's only one thing you remember in my Q&A, Marxism will come through the Green Movement quicker than anything else.
Yeah.
Just remember that. Write it down. Bring it to the bank. I'm telling you, Marxism will come via the environmentalists more than anything else. Okay, so they don't want to have kids because the schools are messed up. Well, again, they're probably just giving you excuses for other reasons. That's a really silly reason. Then educate your kids yourself or go send them to Colorado Christian Academy. God says be fruitful and multiply, right? I have a daughter, 1 year old. Not easy. Unbelievably fulfilling. And I understand why so many of these people are miserable. They want that, but they don't want the work. And that's too bad because the beautiful things in life take effort. They take dedication. They take sacrifice. Instant gratification is not the way to lasting joy. The hard things lead you to the beautiful things. And we need to tell young people that. And having kids is the most awesome thing ever. And by the way, we're on the verge of a population crisis in this country. We are in a very dangerous, dangerous territory where having children is now not... What's amazing is now in the first time in the history of the species, we are realizing that having children is not natural. And I say, what do you mean? That actually the act of having children is natural. But if you have the technology to prevent it, most human beings actually don't want to have kids. And that's what we're seeing. We have more 30-somethings that are single and not married and without children than those that are single and married and have children. It's remarkable. So, we saw it during COVID. You would think during COVID that the birth rate would skyrocket. A lot of people at home with nothing to do. It went down. It's because people live in fear and they let that control their behavior. Yes.
Hi, Grace Schrader, first grade teacher. Thank you. I was forced into asking a question, but my question is, do you have any specific recommendations regarding curriculum or subject priorities in order to push the conservative agenda forward and work against the woke agenda?
It's a great question. Yes. So the most important, first grade is hard, not impossible. The most important thing that we are not doing at the first, second, third, fourth grade is talking about how bad it is to lie, how truth is the central value of any free society. At the root of wokeism is an acceptance of untruth. You kill wokeism immediately as soon as you introduce truth. Immediately. This is why they have to prevent us from speaking. Because if you're allowed to have truth, you cannot say that men can give birth. If you have truth, you can't say that America's a racist country. So as a first grade teacher, you have to talk about how important it is to never lie, why you must have truth as a central pillar of society, which is why our founding father said in the Declaration we hold these truths to be self-evident. Truth as an ultimate absolute value is something the founders understood was necessary for a flourishing republic.
Charlie, thank you. So I don't think, when I hear liberal, I don't even know what the definition is anymore. Because most people say they're liberal, but is there liberal even today? Does it exist? Like what I think I run into is a form of extreme extremism, where it's an ideology that's not even liberal. So how do we deal with that?
Yeah, so there are very few actual liberals left in public life. Alan Dershowitz is a liberal, right? But they're mostly totalitarian Marxists is what they are, right? And so we have to stop calling them liberals. Leftist is fine, right? Or left-wingers or Marxists or wokies, right? There's all sorts of different types of terms. It depends on what issue in particular you're dealing with. But I'll give you an example. When I visit these campuses, I can find out immediately what I'm dealing with based on a couple questions. I'll have somebody come up to a question line. I'll say, do you believe in black-only dormitories? And most of them will say yes, which is there's hundreds of black-only dormitories across the country. White-only spaces, black-only spaces. So that's segregation, right? That is not a liberal value. I'll ask another question. I'll say, do you believe through surgery, hormones, or other means, a biological man can become a female? And they'll say yes. That is not a liberal value. That's insane. And it's against everything that we know to be true. By the way, if there's one piece of advice I could give you, the issue that we can win on, that we have to go all in on, is this trans issue. It is against God's design. They're going after our children. They're grooming them. It's sexually perverse. And there will be hundreds of thousands of kids, mark my words, in a decade from now, with their breasts cut off and their private parts no longer there, that will be unable to have children or be able to be in relationships for irreversible damage because of clinics in this state that have facilitated the butchering of an entire generation. So please fight against it. It is one of the most evil and sinister things. So it's not liberalism is what I'm getting at. It's something else. They don't believe in speech. 52% of college people on college campuses, 52% say that they think that hate speech should be not allowed on campus. And of course, they'll just call everything conservative hate speech, and therefore there is no speech. What is their goal, everybody? You in Colorado are living more in their goal than most people realize. A one-party state. That is their goal. And they're getting closer and closer to that. Okay, final question.
Okay, final question. I feel like this side of the room has not... Okay, we got one. All right.
All the way over there. So while you're going over there, if you haven't yet, if you're not subscribed to our podcast, please consider doing so. Who here listens to our podcast? Anybody? Thank you, guys. That really blesses us, and thank you for that. This will be the final question.
Okay, so I have to thank you for my very late nights watching you going down the rabbit hole on social media. My question is about social media.
Sure.
What is your thoughts on that? We have really young children that we're trying to not expose them to it, but you're on that, and we how do we navigate that with our littles that are exposed to that?
Great question. So I have a one-year-old daughter, and I might fail in this, but at least the standard we're setting is she doesn't get a smartphone till I got a smartphone. So I got a smartphone at age 19, and my upbringing was awesome. I lived in a great country growing up 10 years ago, okay? When I was in high school, we spoke to one another. It was unbelievable. We didn't gossip on some sort of Snapchat or TikTok forum. And so I might fail in that. I see zero reason why a child should get any form of smartphone before 18 or 19. Maybe
Amen.
A flip phone, maybe. But I'm a radical in this, and I could go down the rabbit hole more. As soon as you hand your child that device, they are a captive of the social media companies. They will rewire their brain in a way where they are a prisoner of oligarchs that hate them, that want to turn them gay, turn them trans, and hate the country. Can I just close really quick? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Please support this school, everybody. I love Colorado. I'm going to be coming back frequently. We have a great Turning Point network here and great chapters across this area. But we as Christians must stand and fight. I really believe that we have allowed ourselves to be on the sidelines and been intolerant of evil for so long. And I think one of the greatest ways that we can fight against all this nonsense and this garbage and this darkness is for Christians to fulfill what Christ told us to do, which is to be salt and light. By definition, salt and light change the environments that they come in contact with, which means that you go to places that don't agree with you, college campuses, and you shine a light in that darkness, or you try to change it for the better. And that also means one of my favorite teachings in John 8, which is quoted all the time by the wokies, where they say, let the first among you cast the first stone. We all know that. But how does that story end? When Christ goes to the woman and he says, sin no more. We have done the first part of no judgy, but have we actually gone to people and tell the society to sin no more? No, we've been done really, really bad with that. Truth will always win as long as people have the courage to speak that truth. We must pour into the next generation. I know a lot of you have listened to this speech and you say, Charlie, I'm exhausted. I'm worn out. I've done everything that has been asked of me. You know, I watch your podcast. I bought the pillow. You know, I've done everything. By the way, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com, just so we're clear, okay? And you're probably saying, Charlie, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the country? I refuse to answer the question, because if I said I was optimistic, you'd go home and do nothing. If I said I was pessimistic, you'd go home and do nothing. All I know is this, is we happen to be alive in a short period of time where everything we do matters, and we serve a loving and almighty God against some spiritual evil that we have never, ever even dreamed of. I'm excited to be alive and in this fight for such a time as this. I pray that you guys will rise up, continue to take terrain. I know it's tough here in Colorado, and for that, thank you guys for so generously welcoming me, and onward we march. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns.
What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.